right. Well, back with you on Eurobytes. I've got my friend Lucas, who's Christian may join us at any time, and Fabian is maybe out in the woods trekking around. We're not really sure. But Lucas, thanks for joining me today.
Of course. Thanks for having me today once more.
We have a lot to talk about. You know, I'm over here in the U.S. looking at the war and looking at Trump's comments on Europe and trying to understand what's happening. But you're on the ground over there, my friend. What's happening in Austria, Germany, et cetera?
You know, we've got several topics going on the European level, on the German level. Austria, not so much, to be honest, at this point. Let's cover Austria first. We're thinking once more about saving money. And now they find that 20 years ago, there's been the so-called Österreich Convent, the convention in Austria, where they were thinking about maybe reducing the number of states. Keep in mind, Austria's got 9 million people in 9 states. You can decide whether that's useful or not, but just like in the US, this has been historically grown number and historically grown borders. Unlike Germany, where the current states, except for like Bavaria and Hesse, have been creations of the post-war world. This is why I think we should hop into a German topic, which would be the draft and reactions to this. I was also thinking about some EU topics, them being the chat surveillance, which has been which has not been supported by European Parliament. And the last thing would be, besides migration, where there's been some news on the EU level, the Hungarian elections. But Todd, you and I, you know, maybe you have a crystal ball on the other side of the Atlantic. Maybe you know the result already, but I don't. So it's going to be an interesting night for all of us regarding the Hungarian elections.
Well, I mean, go ahead.
Okay, let's step into the draft, shall we?
Yeah, sure.
So Germany has ended the draft in 2010. Some of you listeners and viewers might remember Karl Theodor zu Guttenberg. Funny thing, his nowadays girlfriend is the current economic minister in Germany. We'll come to this at one point because she's doing quoting the chancellor, who's from a party, an irritating job. The draft has been abolished roughly 16 years ago, and now Germany is thinking about introducing the draft once more. There is not a real draft as of right now, but they are updating the federal army laws, the Bundeswehrgesetze, and now they came up with the great idea of having everyone receive a questionnaire. Every man who turns 18 in this year or in each year shall receive a questionnaire, and they have to fill it in. It's a very German thing. German census also works like you're being sent a questionnaire and you're being fined if you're not paying for if you're not filling it in. I've been sick with a classical kid's disease for the past week because my son infected me with this. He got it from a friend, and then I also got a questionnaire. And the first thing is, they're not like, we hope you're doing well. They're like, if you don't fill this one in by the next 10 days, we're going to fine you. Anyway, so as for the draft, things are looking dire, to be honest. I don't think that people will actually respond to this questionnaire favorably. People will be like, oh yeah, by the way, I don't really do sports well. I run the mile in 20 minutes, these kind of things. And, you know, as of right now, everyone was thinking there's no pouvoir the German government has to actually enforce this. And then out of nowhere comes this news report where they're like, listen up, did you know that every German young man aged 18 to, I think, 45 needs to register any intended stay abroad that exceeds 90 days with the local army recruitment office? And people are like, oh, well, we didn't know that this was actually going to happen. Obviously, this happens. Every country that has a draft, including Austria, has these things. As an Austrian, I know that, like, living abroad, if you haven't done your compulsory service when you move back or when you visit Austria for more than 3 weeks, you need to register with the recruitment office. And I think this is a very useful thing. And
so it's not, the way it's being framed in the U.S. is that German men have to get approval to leave the country for more than 3 months.
Is that correct?
Okay.
Yes, that is correct. They say that the approval is automatically given if it's not not given actively, or like if they don't contest it, it's given. But given the speed of decision making in German politics, people who go on vacation or doing a world trip, they better sign up right now and let them know. And there has been a major backlash to this, basically. Mm. On the left side of the political aisle, the Conservative Party, like the CDU and its youth wing, the Junge Union, they try to go a completely different way. And earlier this morning, Johannes Winkel, who's the chairman of the Junge Union, went like, yeah, we want a draft reintroduced by January 1st, 2027. Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind, Winkel hasn't done any military service. I mean, he could have done so. It's like you're free to do voluntary military service. You can even do it on the weekends in Germany nowadays. Like you can, I think it's 34 weekends in a row or something. And then you're like in the Army Reserve. It's an interesting thing because today's world feels very much more real to young people suddenly that they are actually being required to register.
Well, you've got an ongoing large war, ground war, trench warfare in Ukraine, drafts in both countries, Russia and Ukraine. Really? You've got the U.S., which is just automated the draft. I mean, that came out of nowhere. That's a little concerning. You have other countries, you know, like Israel drafting its person. There is a push for global war, right? And so this is obvious. It's happening. Yes,
it is. And the rhetoric is changing as well, obviously. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, 5, 6, 7 years ago, or even in the beginning of the Ukraine war, Germany agreed to only send defensive weapons because this was kind of like the baseline where people could agree on. Now it seems like the media has pushed people into it's necessary to do all this. Like I personally, I do support a useful compulsory service. I think mm-hmm. if there is something useful you can do, you can give to society. Mm-hmm. However, in the 21st century, governments need to ask themselves, are people giving back or are they basically giving up front and I need to make it up to them afterwards? And
yeah,
honestly speaking, I didn't really think that our governments on both sides of the Atlantic actually offer this much of service nowadays that people say, okay, I enjoy or I accept being drafted into service. Keep in mind, in Germany and Austria, the draft means you can always do the alternative service. You can do civil service, which means you can like be an ambulance driver or an ambulance. Like a paramedic or something, you can be in a retirement home. In Germany and Austria, you can also do what's it called, remembrance service, where you go to old concentration camps and become like I think they're not called tour guides, but like, you know, guide basically.
Like historians, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Kind of like an amateur historian. Mm-hmm. The thing is, these things will also still be possible. And as long as these things are possible, you can't really expect, you can't really count a set number for the German army, for example. Like, mm-hmm. yes, there's 85 million people living in Germany, out of which probably 70 million are Germans who would be subject to compulsory service. Let's say there's another 3 million people who are like a German, Turkish, dual citizens. They can pick between a different country. So in the end, you're like at 65 million people aged 0 to 65, aged 0 to 90. Let's say there's, I don't know, 500,000 people, 400,000 men coming of age every single year. That doesn't really mean that you can count on every one of these. You can likely count on a third of these people actually opting for military service. And then comes the German creative solution. Back in the day when the draft was still in place, they didn't even know what to do with this amount of people because the Bundeswehr system is just not made for this amount of people.
Yeah.
So they came up with things like, yeah, if your two brothers did service already, you're not even being asked. Mm. The truth is that the German army does have a vital interest, or Germany as a country has a vital interest in knowing whether people are willing and capable of defending the country. But one does have to say, in a time where roughly 50% of people coming of age nowadays have like a foreign, like at least one foreign parent, I don't know whether the loyalty towards Germany is that strong. And like, ending the draft and reintroducing it, they should never have ended in the first place, but reintroducing it, I don't know whether this actually gives you the right thing.
Let me ask you, the push by MERS to spend a lot of money on the military and rebuild the German armed forces. Is there will and money to do that, or is that just a pie?
There is will. There used to be money, and I think 1 week ago there's been the report that there's the so-called Sondervermögen, the special funds. This means like Bundestag, like the House of Representatives, they have the budget authority. They do approve an annual budget. And with a special stock of money, they can just approve this once. You take up the debt 1 year, and then the government doesn't really get controlled, or there's no checks and balances for this anymore. And 95% of money that has been spent from this special fund has been misappropriated. 95%.
Wow, amazing.
Let me just look this up. Yeah, so there's even the German government media, Tagesschau, which is part of this, you know, you pay 18 euros 36 for it, otherwise you being fined or go to jail. They say, researchers say 1 year after this has been passed, only a small part of the money actually goes into what's being agreed on, which is mainly infrastructure. It's 5%, which has been really appropriated properly. German infrastructure is crumbling. We all agreed 1.5 years ago, roughly, that it's important to spend money on bridges, on motorways, on railway, because if there was a war, if Europe were to be defended, Western allies would expect to push supplies through Germany, and they couldn't do so. The German railroad network and the German motorway network is not capable of actually sustaining any warfare, let's say, if Russia were to attack Poland. Germany would be this bottleneck. You know what the bottleneck means. All the old Cold War plans will come to action, and we'll finally have the Fulda Gap bombings. Yeah.
Wow.
They did put all the charges out of the bridges, though, so maybe it's time to not spend money on infrastructure anyway.
Holy cow. All right. Yeah, you see all the bridges being blown up in Lebanon. Okay, so what's next?
I'd have two things, as I mentioned, regarding the EU. Mm-hmm. One thing has been the decision not to introduce the mandatory CHET protocol or CHET surveillance, which I think is a good thing. It shows that the EU does decide things properly from time to time. Just for the American reader, listeners and viewers, the EU was suggesting to require every single instant messaging service to open up their encryption mechanisms for governments, so they could have a protocol on what's actually being written, what's actually being said. The main problem with this would be, like, it's all always protecting children, which is a legitimate thing, you know, this absolutely legitimate thing. But where you as a, like, ways an interested citizen should always get skeptical is when they're like, yeah, how long do you store the data? Forever.
Yeah.
So it's like, we do have one topic in Germany that actually comes to my mind right now. It's, I'm going to send you a link to this so you can add it to the show notes, perhaps. They're thinking about changing laws on assigning plots of land to people. Like, sometimes communities sell plots which are being held by the municipalities, so young families or so can, you know, build single family homes and stuff. And someone came up with the idea, hey, why not, like, what do you actually do if an AFD member wants to buy a plot of land? How dare he live on his own plot of land? You know, maybe he's doing his own country from there on. So what they came up with, and this is currently still just in a suggestion mechanism, but it might actually pass legislative, the Bundestag in this case, is they want to enable the municipalities to inquire about people with the constitutional protection offices, so basically our domestic intelligence service. Do you know anything about this political viewpoint of these people?
This is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At US Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
One of these people. So storing data, like I had this topic with my wife today as well, and storing data on the government side is always a bad idea. And storing data on someone's political viewpoints is outright dystopical or dystopian.
Of course. Yeah.
So I think we should move on to one more dystopia on the EU side, which would be, what if the whole EU would be overrun by people who come to the EU only for social benefits? Well, they actually had a suggestion on this. 2.5 weeks ago, there's been a big huff and puff in the German media, basically, on the fact that there has been a suggestion in the European Parliament saying that there should be asylum centers outside the EU. People come to the EU, they're being brought to, let's say, Kenya or Cameroon or maybe the Kosovo, and their asylum requests and also their normal migration requests would be processed there. And there was no majority for the European Conservatives. So out of nowhere comes this message, oh yeah, the European Conservatives were talking to the three right-wing parties, you know, to ECR, to Patriots, and to what's the third one called, ESN. And obviously, German media were like, oh no, the Brandmauer, the firewall is crumbling on the European level. And then this, you know, Germans love their late night political shows. And Manfred Weber, who's the spokesperson for the European Conservative Party in the European Parliament, and at the same time is also from the CSU. People do remember him as actually the guy who was supposed to become the European Commission's president. You know, then Ursula von der Leyen took the job for a reason I couldn't disclose because I didn't know it. I just know that the voter voted differently. Anyway, he had to explain, oh no, we're not working with the AfD in the European Parliament. Well, it turns out they did work with the AfD in the European Parliament. Manfred Weber at one point says, I don't surveil the chat groups of my party members, which I think is a good thing. You know, it shows why there shouldn't be any chat surveillance. Long story short, 2 weeks ago, the European Parliament passed suggestion to the European Commission, which is basically like the European government, you could say, that they want the EU to enter into negotiations with other countries whether they would take our asylum seekers. I think it's a good thing. Everybody thinks it's a good thing, you know.
Hope for that to get pushed through? What do you think?
I think so. You've seen the issue happening with the British, with the European Court of Human Rights, which is not an EU instrument. It's like a European Council instrument. But was trying to infringe on this, but I gotta say the EU is doing an okay job right now regarding migration. Maybe I'm a bit biased because an Austrian commissioner is responsible for this, but he's kind of one of these people who's not doing a lot of who's not causing a lot of noise, but they're cleaning out the backyard. On April 10th, the so-called entry-exit system was activated, and you know, I'm flying for work every single week, so I do see what's happening in airports, and you can tell that they're redoing all these passenger screens, and people are being screened more properly when they're foreigners, not from the EU. And I've heard a report earlier today that 27,000 people were actually denied access or denied entry to the EU at airports over the past 3 months when the system was rolled out. 900 security risks were detained, security risk is in 100% of cases a guy from the Middle East with bad ideas.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's working well.
An Asian man. Yeah. West Asian man, yes.
West Asian man. I got to say, though, I think it's an important thing for Americans to not see the EU as an adversary. The EU is currently doing the EU is always what's happening in the member countries. And the member countries have shifted to the right significantly over the past years. Keep in mind, Rassemblement National is in polls the strongest party in France. AfD is the strongest party in polls again in Germany. FPÖ is the strongest party in Austria, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And while in most countries, there are still governments which try to introduce this so-called cordon sanitaire against the right-wing parties, on the EU level, people didn't really care this much. Now, right-wing voters didn't really go to EU elections this much, but for the past 10 years, they've realized that the really important things do happen on a European level. So what's happening, in clear words, European policy nowadays is more to the right than the German domestic policy or the Austrian domestic policy is right now. And this is a good thing because of countries like Italy are helping us actually push migration policy towards a safer Europe. They have vital interest in this. You know, countries like Sweden seems like waking up. The Eastern European countries, they don't want to become new Germany, new France, new Belgium, new Netherlands. So I think what we see right now is Germany has lost this claim to EU leadership, which, say this is someone who's lived in Germany, is a good thing to happen because German politics has been an interesting abyss over the past 15 years.
So maybe if the tide is turning in Europe, a loss in Hungary won't be so devastating. What do you think?
I think it's not that devastating, to be honest. We don't know the result yet. Viktor Orban is running against Peter Madjar, who left Fidesz 2 years ago. So even if TISA, the party of Peter Madjar, actually were to win the elections, I think they would mainly do the same political things that Viktor Orban did, only with less of a pro-Russian influence. Yeah. But they're certainly not pro-Ukrainian. Nowadays, as a European, you always need to decide, are you pro-Ukraine or are you pro-Russia? You can't, the third option would be that...
You can't be pro-peace.
Supporting either is detrimental for the EU. We had the defense topic earlier. The German arsenal is empty. Keep in mind, we needed American Patriot systems to be shipped to Ukraine for them to have air defense that's capable of doing anything. Now the Americans are shipping this to Israel, I think. So we can't deliver the things. In Germany, these things are missing. German defense platforms that are being developed slowly. And once they're deployed, at times it turns out that they're not, back in the late 30s, German military equipment was state-of-the-art. Avant-garde, you would say. In the 2030s, German military equipment will be avant-garde again for a good purpose and good cause at this point. But right now, it's once again a bottleneck situation. You have German defense manufacturers who can't really fulfill the numbers that are being acquired. And whenever you agree to deliver more than you can, quality suffers. Now, Volkswagen, for example, the famous car maker, which is in deep financial trouble right now, they're thinking about changing some of their assembly lines to actually produce military parts, which I think is a totally legit thing, but it takes time. It takes time for them to actually make this all happen. But going back to Hungary once more, I wouldn't bet on Peter Madjar winning the election. I also wouldn't bet on Viktor Orban losing the election. The Hungarian election system is very interesting. A friend of mine from Hungary explained to me, and I actually checked this on an Austrian podcast. Austrians love Hungary because they have been together, intertwined in history for centuries. In Hungary, you can, the Hungarian parliament is voted for by the first-past-the-post system. There's only, in Germany, there's kind of like half the parliament is being assembled by the state vote and the other half by the county vote. In Hungary, there's only counties. And when you decide to vote in a different county, this actually influences said other counties. So today, there must have been a crazy movement of people moving out from their own districts, going to other districts, casting their vote there to influence this district. It's kind of like a same-day gerrymandering.
Yeah, wow, amazing.
So whether or not Viktor Orban gets another term mainly depends on Fidesz having been able to distribute voter streams properly or not. So I would also not say that if Orban has lost, should he have lost this election, I wouldn't really say that people have voted against Orban. The other party, Tisza, just had better organization. What is an issue in Hungary, allegedly, is corruption. Now, I'm not living in Hungary. I can't read Hungarian newspapers, but there has been an odd phone call between Peter Szijjártó, the Hungarian foreign minister, and Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, that has been intercepted and published. And they're like, Sergei Lavrov is reminding Peter Szijjártó that, oh yeah, since our last phone call, you wanted to help my friend XYZ's sister, and she was inquiring how this is going, like frozen after not being able to get a visa for the EU. And in German, we say, like it has bad taste.
Yeah, sure.
It leaves a sour taste in your mouth, basically.
Sure.
So,
you know, that's a lot. Well, go ahead.
Let's hope for the best. And even if Tisza makes the race, Hungarian policy won't be pro foreigners suddenly. It would be less pro Chinese. Viktor Orban and also his Serbian colleague Aleksandar Vučić, they are very much in support of strong ties to China because China is funding a lot of their infrastructure. There's a new high-speed rail being built from Budapest to Belgrade. It's being funded by the Chinese state rolling stock company or something. And you know, I'm a European first. I'm an Austrian first and foremost, and then I'm a European. And then I'm a supporter of the American-European alliance of the people and also of our respective countries. And I don't want Europe to become the backyard of China. You look at what's happening in Africa, where the Chinese government hand out money, and then after some years, they're like, oh, yeah, you can't pay your interest, can you? I don't want
this
to happen.
We'll take your port.
Yep, and I don't. This has happened in Greece several times. They were also trying to buy the port of, I think, Piran or Koper in Slovenia and in Croatia. They're trying to invest in the port of Trieste. They're trying to fund a tunnel between Finland and Estonia. I don't want China. Like, we all know how the Chinese work. We know how deeply intertwined Chinese government and the economy is, and you can't get one without the other. You can't buy anything from a Chinese company that's offering you critical infrastructure without getting a kill switch installed from the Chinese government. And frankly speaking, this election is not an unimportant one, but it's not hurting Europe this much. Either way. Oh, and there we got it in the German Frankfurt Allgemeine. Viktor Orban admits to a painful loss and congratulates Peter Madar.
There you go. We'll have to.
This is why Eurobytes is a great podcast because you get state-of-the-art news at a state-of-the-art hour, 9:40 p.m. in Europe.
Insight you're not going to get anywhere else. I've got to run to another show, Lucas, but thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. Take care. Thank you for having me once more, and we'll see you soon. Bye.
We'll be back with the crew. Take care.
All right, bye.